Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritcha. Naram Chayeva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayo Mudirayet. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavachu Tamashloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadev, the author. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus, loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Kapi habi bolo se dinamar. Huh? When or when will that day be mine? So it's a very long Sanskrit, but I don't know why. I just want to read it, even though I know I'm not great at it. But so please bear with me. I'm not going to recite it because it will take the whole class time. Even three people to do it, I think. Aho kashtam prastoham atmavatam anupatad yad vimukta samasta sangasya vivikta. Hare Krishna. Not working so good? Maybe. Should I go a little louder, maybe? Well, you get this thing going down your throat. It's a little nerve-wracking. Vivikta punyaranya sharanyasyatmavata atmani sarvesham. Atmanam Bhagavat Vasudeve Tad Anu Shravana Manana Sankirtana Radhana Ananu Smarana Vyogena Sunyaya. That's one word. Sakala Yamena Kalena Samaveshitam Samahitam Kartsnyena Manastat Tupunar Mama Buddhas Yaran Mriga Sutam Anupari Sushrava. So this is the heartfelt expression, lamentation of the great soul, Marj Bharat, in the body of a deer. This great soul, so advanced in spiritual life that even though he got the body of a deer, he didn't identify with it at all, and he could remember what it was that got him in the body of the deer. That's extremely unusual. Prabhupada said, as soon as you get the body of a dog, you think, woof, woof, I'm a dog. If I get the body of... I mean, I've been initiated as Jaya Bhadra, but there's still a part of me that identifies with Joan Murphy. And all the ideas I have about who that may be. Luckily, I'm getting bombarded with all kinds of nectar constantly, so hopefully the situation is gradually changing. In the body of a deer, Bharata Maharaj began to lament. What misfortune! I have fallen from the path of the self-realized. I gave up my real sons, wife and home, to advance in spiritual life, and I took shelter in a solitary holy place in the forest. I became self-controlled and self-realized, and I engaged constantly in devotional service, hearing, thinking, chanting, worshipping, and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. I was successful in my attempt, so much so that my mind was always absorbed in devotional service. However, due to my personal foolishness, my mind again became attached, this time to a deer. Now I have obtained the body of a deer and have fallen far from my devotional practices. Purport by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Due to his stringent execution of devotional service, Maharaj Bharata could remember the activities of his past life and how he was raised to the spiritual platform. Due to his foolishness, he became attached to an insignificant deer and thus fell down and had to accept the body of a deer. This is significant for every devotee. If we misuse our position and think that we are fully engaged in devotional service and can do whatever we like, we have to suffer like Bharata Maharaj and be condemned to accept the type of body that impairs our devotional service. Only, Shivara Gopinath Ki Jai, only the human form is able to execute devotional service, but if we voluntarily give this up for sense gratification, we certainly have to be punished. This punishment is not exactly like that endured by an ordinary materialistic person. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee is punished in such a way that his eagerness to attain the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva is increased. By his intense desire, he returns home in the next lifetime. Devotional service is very completely described here, and that there's that long passage I told you. Tad anusravana manana sankirtana radhanu smadana bhiyogena. The constant hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. Who knows the verse? 10:9-14. Famous verse. Satatam. Itantas. Chadridhavataha. I have the rest down at the bottom of the page. We'll go over it, okay? Tushanti Chavan. No, I always get them. Is that Tushanti Charamantacha? No, I always get them mixed up too. Okay, we'll hear it. Those who have taken to Krishna consciousness should be very careful that not a single moment is wasted, and that not a single moment is spent without chanting and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His activities. By his own actions, that's Krishna's own actions, and by the action of his devotees, Krishna teaches us how to become cautious in devotional service. Through the medium of Bharata Maharaj, Krishna teaches us that we must be careful in the discharge of devotional service. If we want to keep our minds completely fixed without deviation, we must engage them in devotional service full time. As far as the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are concerned, they have sacrificed everything to push on this Krishna consciousness movement, yet they must take a lesson from the life of Bharata Maharaj to be very cautious and to see that not a single moment is wasted in frivolous talk, sleep, or voracious eating. Eating is not prohibited, but if we eat voraciously, we shall certainly sleep more than required. How many times are we going to hear this without cringing? Sense gratification ensues, and we must be degraded to a lower life form. In that way, our spiritual progress may be checked, at least for the time being. The best course is to take the advice of Srila Rupa Goswami, Avyarta Kalatvam. Who remembers what that means? We'll also read that verse. Ah, yes, we shouldn't, not a single moment should be wasted. One of my godbrothers, sometimes my godbrothers, or sometimes my godsisters, like to indulge in their old talents of rock music. So he just made this kind of rhythm and blues. And the only word in there was, don't waste your time. He kept going, and please don't waste your time. And that was the whole thing, don't waste your time. He had Prabhupada also saying, don't waste a moment in there. So he obviously also felt that, although it might be considered that making a rock song about that might be a little bit of a waste of time, but never mind. We should see that every moment of our life is utilized for the rendering of devotional service and nothing else. This is the secure position for one wanting to return home back to Godhead. How many people want to return back home, back to Godhead? Yeah, I want to do, but I got so many other things in my mind as well. I also want to, but it's, I can't say that it's all I ever think about, and that's sad. So Prabhupada's saying, if this is what you want, then this is the advice. And if this is not what you want, this is even more the advice. So that desire can take precedence from all the other desires. I remember when I was writing my thesis for my Bhaktivedanta College, I was so much into it, I was saying, Krishna, if I have to die soon, please let me finish my thesis first. I was so attached to doing it. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjanastalakaya Chakshud Unmitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master has forced open my eyes with the torch light of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Banchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanan Pavane Pyo Vaishnave Pyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. So who remembers what Prabhupada said is significant for every devotee in this purport? Just synopsis-wise. Well, something more specific, an incident that we all know that he's referring to. Probably this is significant for every devotee. This all came after. This is what became before. He's talking about the elevated position of Bharat Maharaj and how Bharat Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you. How Bharat Maharaj, due to his personal foolishness, he was very advanced in devotional service, and due to his personal foolishness, he said it was foolish, and Prabhupada didn't disagree with him. Of course, Prabhupada can say like that about Bharat Maharaj because Prabhupada and Bharat Maharaj are on the same level. Of course, as devotees who are trying to advance in Krishna consciousness, we don't think, oh, this Bharat Maharaj, he was so foolish. We could think, if only I could have that small amount of foolishness as Bharat Maharaj. Sometimes Prabhupada talks about Bharat Maharaj and he says, he was such a great soul that he returned back home to Godhead in only 3 births. We don't know how many births we've been here. But still, this is very significant for all devotees. Does anybody know where Sudevi is? I want her to come. Okay. Never mind. Maybe she'll come. So Prabhupada says, if we misuse our position and think that we are fully engaged in devotional service and can do whatever we like, we'll be forced to suffer like Bharat Maharaj. Again, to suffer like Bharat Maharaj doesn't seem like such a bad thing for someone who's thinking in terms of how many births do I have left in this material world. But Srila Prabhupada wants us to take a lesson from Bharat Maharaj. He's assuming that all of us are anxious to follow his instructions and to go back to Godhead. So he understands that that's not so easy for us. So he's trying to give us some instructions, and he's using Bharat Maharaj as an example. He says, if we think we can do whatever we like, how many times do we feel, I can do whatever I like? How many times does it slip into our mind during the day? Huh? And what was the warning Prabhupada gave? If we think like that, what will happen to us? Kansavali winced when she heard this. You said, oh! What kind of body will we get? We said something, and we get the kind of body that will impair our devotional service. It's like, don't I already have enough impediments? Like, do I need more? So I'm already suffering because I have so many impediments to my practice of devotional service. Impediments that arise from my body and from my mind. So do I really need more? So that's a question that arose in my mind when I read this. Like, for instance, how can we give an example? What kind of activity will we do if we think I can do anything I want? Yeah, so let's get real. What kind of activities? Huh? Anybody else like to give an example? Everybody's shy, huh? Watch the news. Movies, Facebook, movies, internet. You think, I can just space out because the mind is like that. Maybe you remember there's a song that was called I'm free to do all that I want any old time. You know, that's, it's actually, it sounds really decadent, but actually it's a song that was made by a slave who'd gotten free from being oppressed at every moment. So I felt a little more sympathy for the song when I realized that it was related to that historically. But it's a tendency for us to think, as a conditioned soul, I'm free to do anything I want any old time. And this is not true, because especially if we understand that the goal of life is to get free from the miseries of conditioned existence, birth, death, old age, and disease. And Prabhupada gives a specific category that only the human form is able to execute devotional service. But if we voluntarily give this up for sense gratification, we certainly have to be punished. So this is even more scary. I might even use my human form. I mean, as devotees, right, we take it for granted that, well, okay, I may not be that great of a devotee, but, you know, I'm guaranteed to get a human form in my next life. Right? And even if I just eat prasadam once, this is sometimes we fall back on that. But if this is not guaranteed for Bharat Maharaj, who can afford to be complacent? Yes, Kanchanvali. Yeah? Well, I mean, I was thinking, what more punishment can there be than even thinking like that? That's like the worst punishment, right? You're just like, you're way out there already. But then there's more. So it's quite heavy. Prabhupada's speaking quite heavy in there. But Prabhupada says something encouraging about this punishment. Do you remember what he said about this punishment? Yes. Yes. That what? Yes, that he becomes... This punishment is not exactly like that endured by an ordinary materialistic person. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee is punished in such a way that his eagerness to attain the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva is increased. So we should all just get in Maya then, and we can get punished, and then our desire will be increased, right? Is that the logic that comes from it? What do you think? You think, Janu, that's good logic? No, good. I'm glad you don't think it's good logic. Sounds pretty? Risky, yes, very risky. Thank you. So the idea is that this kind of punishment may be meted out in different degrees for different devotees, but it's like very advanced devotees who get the kind of punishment that immediately increases their desire. For instance, he could have just gotten the body of a deer, but he got a body of a deer, and he could still remember his devotional service. And I mean, as a pure devotee, he didn't really care so much about having the body of a deer, because that kind of a devotee is detached. But he saw that Krishna had to do this to him because I was deviating. So it was a very personal thing for him. And it's really interesting. I was thinking about this. In the body of a deer, he went and hung out with the sages. So he became a risk for the sages, the same way that the deer was a risk for him. So it's like, man, oh man, he really, I'm sure as a very highly developed, extremely sensitive devotee, he must have felt really bad. Here I'm doing what was done to me, and probably every time one of the sages patted him, he cringed. You know what I mean? Thinking, okay, he wanted the touch of a Vaishnava. He wanted to be, you know, the mercy of the Vaishnava. But, oh my God, what if the sage gets attached to me and gets deviated like I did? I mean, it was a very difficult position. It was a very good punishment. Krishna knows exactly what to do, right? And then Prabhupada gives the example that by this intense punishment that he received, by his intense desire, he could go back to Godhead in his next lifetime. And this is reassuring. And maybe we can think of another example of a devotee who was so-called punished by the Lord in order to increase his desire to go back home, back to Godhead. We should all know this one very well. Prabhupada talks about it a lot. Not a lot. He's quite humble. But he talks about himself in this regard. He quotes this famous verse a lot. Yasya ham anugrinami harishe tadhanam shanai tatodhanam chajant yasya swajana dukadukitam. Personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. And Prabhupada, he wrote about that when he was in Vrindavan, because Prabhupada, he had such opportunity. He was predicted that he could become an extremely wealthy man. But in his later life, his business ventures kept falling through. And there's a poem that Prabhupada that he wrote when he's sitting in Vrindavan about how what happened to his mother and his father and his grandfather and all his folk, his kith and kin. He said, they're all just names. He said, I sit here, and it all sounds like really depressing, and then he goes, I sit here and I have a good laugh. This is the vision of a soul who realized, I have gotten the mercy of God. What did you want to say, dearest? He did what? Yeah. Well, he would, I mean, yeah, but not right away. Prabhupada, you know, he had to look at his wife and say, do you want tea or do you want me? And what did she say? Tea, of course. As any good wife would say, jokingly to her husband. Of course, there was a history to this relationship that didn't make it so funny for Prabhupada anymore. She said it one too many times. I mean, after she sold his Bhagavatam for tea biscuits, and Prabhupada would not have known what happened to his Bhagavatam except his little son told him not to sell it in the marketplace for tea biscuits. And for Prabhupada, that was like the last straw. So Prabhupada says, in this regard, although a Vaishnava's happiness and distress are felt as pleasure and pain, just like ordinary karmic reactions, they are different in a significant sense. Material happiness and distress arising from karma leave a subtle residue, the seed of future entanglement. Such enjoyment and suffering tend towards degradation and increase the danger of falling into a hellish oblivion. So for a devotee to be oblivious, I don't know how many of you have ever had the experience of having a dream, like a really bad dream, and in the dream you don't even think of Krishna. And then you wake up, you think, man, that was so bad. And I didn't even remember Krishna. I didn't even remember anything about it. I didn't even call out to him. That was the worst part of it. And that's called hellish oblivion. Happiness and distress generated from the Supreme Lord's desires, however, leave no trace after their immediate purpose has been served. Moreover, the Vaishnava who enjoys such reciprocation with the Lord is no longer in danger of falling down into nescience. So, and that's, oh, there she is. Just a second. Okay, let's see what she says. So sometimes you see devotees getting punished and you feel really bad for them. But a person who's advanced in spiritual life accepts that this is necessary. Even one person, his name was Benedict. Maybe I've mentioned him before. He's such a nice man. He was coming to the temple every year. He was married, but he was more of a kind of a mystic recluse. Somehow or other, he ended up getting married because he wasn't fully realized. And he used to love the devotees. He never really became a devotee, but he was very busy with God and nature. But the last time I saw him, he was in an advanced stage of throat cancer. He could hardly speak. And I was asking him, what's his experience? He said, I'm dying. And I experience that my life, I'm moving through this water of life. I said, is there one of you, if there's two of you, Krishna's devotees, we want. Sorry, I'll turn it off. I just want to see what she's going to do. She's laughing her head off. She goes, yeah, right. I told her we're all waiting for her. Okay, so I'm just going to turn it off now. Sorry about that, folks. I just want to... Because she said she would come. I think it's important that she's here. All right, that's it. No more. I'm sorry, this is a deviation here. So he was saying that he was going through this river of life and it was just closing behind him. I said, is there one of you or is there two of you? He says, God is there and God is saying to me, I know that this suffering is not nice for you, but it's necessary. He said, he's communicating this to me. And he says, but because he's there and he's reassuring me that this is part of my process, I feel okay. But he said, sometimes I don't feel him there. And then he said, then it gets very bad. So he was revealing to me what his dying process was like. He was such a nice person. But he, as a person who was quite advanced in self-realization, he understood that suffering was coming from God, not because God was punishing him in order to enjoy. Sometimes we have this vision of God, right? That God is enjoying our suffering. But God is not enjoying our suffering. Why should we, who have been in this world for so long, who have caused so much suffering for so many beings due to our ignorance and our foolishness, begrudge a small amount of suffering as part of our process for being rectified? Actually, we would feel a little bit, what would the word be? We'd feel a little bit unjustified put my finger on it. We would feel it's not right that I just get everything just like that. Maybe you know the story of Jagai and Madai. Madai was a great sinner, but he did get rectified. But when he got rectified, his mind was haunted by all the suffering he had caused for so many people. Bhargopinath ki jai. And he didn't know what to do. And the only person he could talk to about it was Lord Nityananda. And he told Lord Nityananda, he said, I don't even remember who they are. All I know is that I caused them so much suffering, so I don't know what to do, but I have an idea what I could do. I could start a bathing ghat in India. I could, this is the pilgrimage, they've been traveling, and the pilgrims have been traveling. They like to stop in a holy place and bathe. So I could create a bathing ghat, and people could come there, and I could be there, and they could mete out whatever punishment to me that they wanted. And Lord Nityananda said, okay, that's a good idea. And he actually did it. So he went out and started building the ghat. And then people who knew who he was, some of them would throw stones at him. And he would feel so good about it. He'd think, finally, and he'd look at them and he'd say, thank you for giving me a little small amount of what I deserve. So he was very sincere in his spiritual life. I don't think I could do that. The idea is that a devotee who understands what it means, first of all, to have turned our back on the one who loves us the most and whom we've had the opportunity to share love with in a way that creates unlimited happiness just because we wanted to and he allowed it, or she allowed it, Radha allowed it. Then we ended up becoming implicated in so many unfortunate situations, then if we have to experience, it's good for us to experience a little bit of suffering. It's not bad. It's not a bad thing, especially if we realize it is personally being given to us by Krishna. Prabhupada, in another purport, says, "The beloved devotees of the Lord do not regard as very troublesome the suffering he imposes on them. Indeed, they find that in the end it gives rise to unlimited pleasure, just as a stinging ointment applied by a physician cures his patient's infected eye. In addition, suffering helps protect the confidentiality of a devotional service by discouraging intrusions by the faithless. And it also increases the eagerness with which the devotees call upon the Lord to appear. If the devotee of the Lord were complacently happy all the time, he would never have a reason to appear in this, the Lord would never have a reason to appear in this world." So a person who is trying to advance in Krishna consciousness likes to contemplate this understanding of suffering and not begrudge this suffering that one has to experience. "It is at night that the sunrise becomes attractive. During the hot summer, that cold water gives comfort, and during the cold winter months, that warm water is pleasing. Lamplight appears attractive in darkness, not in the glaring light of day, and when one is distressed by hunger, food tastes especially good." In other words, to strengthen his devotee's mood of dependence on him and longing for him, the Lord arranges for his devotee to go through some suffering. And when he appears in order to deliver them, their gratitude and transcendental pleasure are boundless. Okay, so this is what the Lord does for those who are very advanced, right? And for those of us who are less advanced, Prabhupada says, "There are certainly many instances where devotees of the Lord have fallen down due to uncongenial association, just like fruit of workers who are always prone to degradation. But even though he falls down..." So how many of you know devotees who have stopped practicing Krishna consciousness and have considered fallen? I think we all know somebody, right? I mean, we even can measure our own relative fall downs throughout the day, but someone who's just really stopped chanting and... "But even though he falls down, a devotee is never to be considered the same as a fallen karmi. Karmi suffers the result of his own fruit of reactions, whereas a devotee is reformed by chastisement directed by the Lord himself. The sufferings of an orphan and the sufferings of the beloved child of a king are not one and the same. An orphan is really poor because he has no one to take care of him. But a beloved son of a rich man, although he appears to be on the same level as the orphan, is always under the vigilance of his capable father." So, of course, everyone is Krishna's son. But to be especially loved by the Lord, I think George Harrison wrote that song, right? "The Lord loves the one who loves the Lord." Did anybody remember that song by George Harrison? He wrote a song like that. Papa told him, write Krishna conscious songs, and he did. So one of the songs he wrote was called "The Lord Loves the One Who Loves the Lord." Not that the Lord doesn't love us all. But Papa says it's normal psychology that if you make a special effort to be in a relationship with someone, then the connection is more, it's more intense, it's more active. So if a soul has expressed to Krishna, "I don't want anything to do with you," he respects that. But if a soul says, "I really want something to do with you, but I'm really having a hard time," he also respects that. So he makes special arrangements for those devotees who have one way or another been drawn away. Prabhupada said especially sex and money are things that are like the big S&M, sex and money. Those are the things that will drag us away from Krishna faster than anything else. The most normal thing in the world, right? Money means all kinds of opulence. And, you know, the most normal thing in the world is to jump to bed with somebody, especially if you like them. That's just how the material energy works, because it's an imitation of Krishna's pastimes, a really gross imitation. We can't even imagine the intense love, the intricacies of love in Radha's and Krishna's pastimes, but it is a relief to know that they exist. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says once in a while we can delve into these pastimes, but not too long, because we'll misunderstand them. We have to begin to experience Krishna within the sphere of our own activities and then sometimes contemplate those wonderful pastimes which we all want to be a part of someday. Instead of being bitten on the heels by sex desire, we'll be afflicted by how can I be part of this? How can I enhance the union of Radha and Krishna? How can I do something to increase their happiness or the happiness of those who are increasing their happiness? It becomes an infinite, selfless journey of ecstatic love, ever increasing. We very much cherish that that goal in our mind. And in the meantime, we're recommended, Prabhupada mentioned this verse, Satatam kirtayantu mam yatantascha dridha rataha namashantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upashate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. And of course, in the same purport, Prabhupada warned us that we shouldn't waste time, not even a single moment. I know devotees who operate like that. My god sister Vishaka, she was just visiting here. And, you know, we're taking prasadam. Of course, after prasadam, we all tend to hang out a little bit and have a little chat. Vishaka was, you know, very polite, very friendly, but she always had something she had to do. So that's that quality of yata kalartvam. That's one of the symptoms of advanced devotional service, that one always is intensely engaged in devotional service. So I don't pretend that I have that intensity. I desire it. I know people who have it. I like their association. I pray for the mercy to come to that level of devotional service. In the meantime, the regulated practice of devotional service is the foundation for making that further advancement. And Prabhupada is very much always urging us. That's why it's very important to associate with Prabhupada as much as we can. Through hearing his lectures, reading the books, discussing the topics among ourselves, and attending all the transcendental sacred rituals. Sometimes people think, oh, it's just rituals. Prabhupada said they're transcendental rituals. And these rituals, Prabhupada says, after many births of performing such transcendental rituals, one becomes a pure devotee. So they're not empty rituals. They're very profound, very potent rituals. So thank you for listening patiently. If anyone would like to make a comment, a question, correction, addition. Yes, Bhagavati. Yes. Yes. This is mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion that a person may be attached to the idea of becoming Krishna conscious but may not be willing to perform the necessary austerities. But then by association with advanced devotees, that unflinching desire will be awakened. So we have to, against all odds, even that tendency to drift off regularly or to get into some kind of self-perpetuating, we have to always reach out to the devotees. It's very powerful. We reach out to each other, we reach out to advanced devotees, and Krishna's watching, Krishna's noticing. We can't take these self-perpetuating tendencies as all in all. They're troublesome, but they're not the all in all. We have one devotee encouraged me the other day, it was very nice. Remember, Kansarali? That we have so many nice things in our life besides our own lack of intention in pure devotional service. We have so many, we have good association, we have the deities, we have Prabhupada's lectures, we have so many good friends who want the best for us. So sometimes our mind is very overwhelming and we feel ourselves, oh man, I'm so down, I'm so out of it, I can't get it together. But by very warm and loving relationships with devotees, some devotee will tell you some nice things and then tell you to stop moaning. So it's nice that we have many assets. So we shouldn't get so discouraged by the these mental tendencies. We should keep faith in a good association, and you're helping to arrange that these days, so that's a great asset for all of us. Don't take the mind as the all-in-all. Is that a little helpful? Try to remember our assets. Don't get so discouraged. That's like enthusiasm is our the first thing that Rupa Goswami recommends. So you think, yeah, you're right, Maya. I'm really down. I'm really out of it, but I'm so happy that I've got these friends. I've got the Maha Mantra. I'm going to keep trying. What you're saying, it's all true. I'm not going to argue with you. I'll offer you my respects. And then you go, help to a devotee. Is that all right? Any other Kanchamala? Did you have your hand up? Oh, Matiji, what's your name, dear? Kishorari? It's an unusual name. What does it mean? It's beautiful. Okay. Well, we don't have to pray for suffering. It's going to come anyways. There's nothing we can do about it. That's the nature of the world. And if we are nicely fixed in our devotional service, then it won't feel like suffering in the same way that it does for, like Prabhupada says, a devotee doesn't experience suffering in the same way. I mean, we just, you see, like, you know, you hear devotees talk about their suffering. It's really amazing. Even, you know, devotees are going through many difficulties that everybody, we all in the world, we're not that different, right? We have bodily problems, we have mental problems, but devotees see them differently. So we're already suffering in so many ways. But it's, I don't think you pray like that, do you? Do you pray to Krishna, don't give me any suffering? You do. Because you had a lot already. You know what it's like. Okay, so that's your own personal thing with Krishna, that he's already given you good dosages of it. It seems like it's worked for you. It's okay, Krishna, you don't have to make me suffer anymore. I'm surrendering. I'll do whatever you want. If we can come to the point where we tell Krishna, I'll do whatever you want, then, you know, even if so-called suffering comes, it'll be okay because you're doing whatever Krishna wants. You'll be protected. That's very glorious. Krishna, it's worked for you. It's great. Is that all right? You hope so, huh? Jai. Yes, Kanchanali. Oh, that's nice. Prabhupada deserves, like, Prabhupada deserves that we die in a way that represents him properly. Huh? Yeah, he wants us to be brahmanas. He defines a brahmana as one who knows he's not the body, who quits the body in God consciousness. A kripana is one who dies like an animal. So he deserves that we live that way and that we die that way because he's given us the full opportunity. So I like that, rather than praying for painless, you know, anyway, that you communicated with Krishna very honestly. I'm sure Krishna appreciated that, and he elevated the nature of your desire by this prayer. One thing is to just open, like, your Kishoradi. Yeah, you're opening your heart to Krishna. You know, and you're telling him, please, I can't handle it, don't give me any more. So that's what also what Krishna wants, that you know that it's him, and that you relate to him, and you pray to him. Whatever's on your mind, just like my favorite example, I've mentioned it a few times, is Kardama Muni. He saw Lord Vishnu, and he told Lord Vishnu, You know, you're so wonderful, and anyone who approaches you for material desires is just an animal. He goes, and I'm an animal. I want a really beautiful wife, and I want her to be a veritable cow of plenty in my household life. That's what I want. And he got it. So, you know, the main thing is that we acknowledge that Krishna is the one, and that we open up our heart to him, let him know what's really going on in our heart. And if we do that, Krishna will, and then, you know, after he had all the fun he wanted with his wife and everything, and after her, he gave her Kapiladeva as his son, he went off and became a pure devotee. He didn't have to have any more beautiful wives in this world. But he didn't try to pretend anything, so that's nice. That's already wonderful that you're regularly communicating with Krishna about what's most important to you. Kanchavali? Yeah, instead of saying to Krishna, can you ask him to be reasonable and see things my way? Krishna, can you show me how to see this properly? Well, that's that. Prabhupada says that, or maybe it's Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion, that you have to go in front of the deity and you have to say, sir, this is the situation. It's very personal. Thank you. Any other points? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he forgot the last part of the statement, but he says, one who is a friend is in me, and I'm a friend to him. He says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone, but one who is a friend to me is in me, and I'm also a friend to him. So he's impartial as long as you want to be impartial. And he's your friend as long as you want him as a friend. So, does that make sense? He's very responsive, extremely responsive. Yes, Vishwamba Prabhu. Yeah. Well, the more personal you are with Krishna, the more you can feel his reciprocation, generally speaking. I mean, there's a process of prayer. You go to Krishna, you sing a bhajan, you glorify him. You don't just walk up and say, "This is." You don't just give him your shopping list, you know what I mean? Whatever it may be. You go to him and you tell him, you know, how beautiful you think he is and how kind and how you're so grateful that, you know, there's a process. And then at a certain point you say, "My Lord, this is my prayer. You know, how I want to serve you better, but this is the problem." And of course, I know, even if you see the prayers of the great acharyas, I know that you're aware of everything. But still, I feel compelled as your devotee to come before you and express this. You know, it's okay. If we do the process of prayer in a very loving and respectful way, then we just, this is the situation. And I'm humbly bowing before you and depending on your mercy. And please give me the intelligence. And he will, or she will. Yes, Kanchavali. Yeah, can be. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we relate to him more in an impersonal way. So it's a very individual thing, but in general, the more personal we can get with Krishna, the better it is. And of course, we have guidelines from the acharyas how to do it in a way that's pleasing to Krishna. So, but the main thing is, it says in the Nectar of Devotion, approaching Krishna, there's no material qualification. The only, and Jamuna talked about this, the only qualification is our sincerity and our seriousness. And that's why, like, I really love to hear from devotees about how they relate to Krishna in such sincere, serious way. It's very inspiring. Yeah, yeah. That's, yeah. Wow. Report to the Lord every day. Wow. Wow. That would really be a good habit to develop, huh? Just like spend a lot. I see some devotees, they do like that. They go in front of the deities every day, and I don't know if, I mean, I notice that they have this habit, and they just stand in front of the deities, and you see they're spending some time. So thank you. That's a, it's such, it just takes a few minutes, but it would be so. Thank you, Kanchanvali. Kanchanvali is a very practical, intelligent person. She knows how to put things in a framework that's doable. So nice, huh? Krishna's like, he's part of the family. He's the main part of the family. Beautiful. It's beautiful. It's just a very practical way of including the Lord in your life. Just like you tell, you know, if you have a wife or your husband, you say, okay, dear, I'm out. I'm going. See you in a bit, you know. Or to speak of the Lord of the heart, who's, he's the most dear. Everything is dear because the Lord exists. And that beautiful song by that devotee, love exists because you are so kind. We love Krishna because Krishna is so kind, so beautiful, and so many things. Okay, I think we can end here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.